My name's Kevin Luckel. I'm with the law firm of Bird, Luckel, Britton & McCants in Atlanta. I'm the head of our corporate and securities practice, and I just wanted to share some things that I've learned over 24 years of law practice and kind of help in keeping with the theme of it's transformational, maybe help you think a little bit differently than you may have thought before about negotiating. So we're going to talk about kingdom-minded business negotiation as a strategy for success. So I'm going to start by setting a context for negotiation. Negotiation is something that, whether you think about it or not, you actually engage in every single day. Negotiation is an intensive human interaction, too, and I think that's important to keep in mind. But in terms of where you encounter negotiation, you encounter it, of course, in business, so in things like negotiating the terms of employment or a sales contract or the purchase of another company's assets, something that I do a lot, or working out the terms of a joint venture with a potential partner, or coming up with the terms of a distribution contract. But in everyday life, you also encounter negotiation, and this is an example that my wife and I often encounter. Which parent will drive which kid to which sports practice, or which dessert to share, or the budget and the format for the wedding plans. When you come to the negotiating table, you bring a lot of yourself. You bring your hopes, your fears, your doubts, your biases, your ego, and your emotions, but so does the other side. So do the people on the other side. We think that we negotiate with companies or with governments or with employers, but the reality is we negotiate with people, and that's key. Negotiation is also an opportunity. It's an opportunity first to achieve your transactional objective, which could be to buy a piece of property or to sell a service, to combine business resources, or to resolve a conflict. It's also an enormous opportunity to be an ambassador for the kingdom of Jesus Christ. And so that's what we're going to bring to the table today as we talk about negotiation. So negotiation always occurs within a kingdom context. So how you negotiate really matters. How you negotiate matters. So we're going to talk today about four principles of kingdom-minded negotiation, and I'm going to give you a quick overview of them, and then we're going to dive in a little more deeply. The first principle that we'll talk about is to recognize that you are negotiating with others who are created in God's image. The second is that your objective in negotiating has to be bigger than just the deal. The third is that in God's economy, win-win is always going to be richer than win-lose. And fourth, kingdom-minded negotiation means smart and confident negotiation. So let's unpack those. Okay, first off, we're negotiating with others who are created in God's image. You're negotiating with people. And the starting point in any negotiation really is how you think about those people. Because how you think about those people is going to drive what you do, your actions in the negotiation. And ultimately, it's going to drive the outcome and whether that outcome is as successful as it really can be. So here's one vision for how to view the other side in a negotiation. If you can, it may be a little hard to read, but it says, let's say we set aside all our petty grievances and just hate each other on general principles. Okay. By contrast, here's what God says. God says that he created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created them. Male and female, he created them. From Genesis 1:27. That's a completely different picture of the people you're negotiating with. And that places a call on you to demonstrate something different because these are image bearers of God. And in my mind, that means, at a minimum, demonstrating respect and empathy and real care for the other side in the negotiation. So in terms of respect, we honor God by respecting the other person as an image bearer of God. And that's really true. That's what we need to do even when they don't reciprocate. So what does that mean? It means that we show kindness even when they are not kind to you. It means approaching them with confident humility. Not pridefulness, not lack of confidence or intimidation, but confident humility. It means respecting the other person by communicating clearly, forthrightly, not hiding the ball or trying to play games or over-strategize in the negotiation, but being clear about your positions and expecting and asking for clear communication from the other side. It means demonstrating integrity and fairness. It means showing an interest in and engaging with the other side's interests. And that's a point we're going to unpack a little bit more deeply as we go forward. But this is a very important point because when you think of the other person as a human being who is a treasured image bearer of God, well, that makes that person a lot more interesting, and you start to think about what's important to that person. Finally, if you encounter unfair tactics or rudeness, you don't have to react with the same kind of behavior, and hopefully you wouldn't want to, but it does mean purposely, intentionally addressing that kind of behavior forthrightly and trying to refocus the negotiation to the topic of the negotiation, not the behavior, and addressing the topic of the negotiation based on principle, objective things, rather than behaviors or feelings. Secondly, it shows that you can show, it calls us to show empathy. Remember, you bring your emotional baggage to the negotiating table. So does the other person on the other side of the table. So this means that you should seek to show interest in their personal backstory and share some of your own. I mean, we can think of that as breaking the ice, of course. It breaks down emotional barriers. But what it really does is showing you're also gathering intelligence about the other person. What is going on that is informing their thinking about the negotiation so that you can use that information to think through options that will be mutually agreeable, mutually beneficial. And finally, care. I mean, it's just God really cares about the people on the other side of the negotiation. Of course, he cares very much for you. But he wants, if you know the Lord, he also wants the other side to know the Lord, to find salvation in Jesus, and to spend eternity with him. So I don't think we can ever really forget this, whether we're in the context of negotiation or any other activity that we have. When we're dealing with people, we're still subject to that kind of gospel call to show Christ and maybe help them find him and salvation. So this means that you should seek to focus on the problem separately from the people. In other words, the people on the other side are not to be regarded as the problem. The problem is the problem. The deal is the problem. The dispute is the problem. Focus on the problem and separate your emotions about the people from the problem and work on the problem. Okay? And taking that a step further, it's very helpful to regard yourself and the other side as collaborators in solving the problem. In other words, approach the other side as someone you can come alongside with and invite them to come alongside of you, and together you work to solve the problem or reach the objective. Good morning. It's important then to communicate a collaborative spirit in both your words and your actions, and be mindful of how you are demonstrating that care and collaborative spirit. The second principle is that your objective needs to be much bigger than the deal. Okay, the context of negotiation and of all of life can be summed up in the Great Commandments and the Great Commission. Okay? So the first of the Great Commandments is to love God. In Mark 12:30, it says, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind and with all your strength." And then Jesus goes on and says to love your neighbor. He says, "You shall love your neighbor as yourself," in Mark 12:31. The other part of this context is the Great Commission. which is to go and make disciples. Go, therefore, and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to observe all that I've commanded you. So how do we fit negotiation into that context? Well, just as with any other intensive human interaction, this is a great opportunity. But here's an illustration of the opposite. If you can't read it, it says, then it's agreed, I'll try to get the best of you, and you'll try to get the best of me. So to illustrate this, I want to talk about some things that can be roadblocks that are pretty commonly encountered in negotiation, roadblocks to a successful and sustainable agreement, and then we're going to talk about some things that can contribute to immediate and sustained success in negotiation. First thing you might encounter is rudeness or pride. Another thing you might encounter is dishonesty or unfair tactics. You might encounter the other side being greedy. You might feel greed. You might feel any of these. Another issue that can be a roadblock is to approach negotiations from a position-based or adversarial perspective, and I'll unpack that a little bit more in a minute. Or you might find someone who's really just concerned with their own interests, or just plain obtuse and stubborn. And finally, you or the other side might approach the negotiation not very well prepared, or maybe not as serious about the negotiation as you should. All of these things can get in the way, can be friction points in negotiation that just don't need to be there. But we have an opportunity to show them something different as believers. So, in contrast to rudeness and pride, we can respond with respect and courtesy and confident humility. We can respond with integrity. We can respond with principled generosity. And by that, I don't mean giving away the store. I mean thoughtful ways of offering something that benefits the other side that can enhance the overall deal for everyone. You can approach negotiations based on interests, what's underlying the positions, and use those underlying interests and understanding about them to be constructive and come up with creative solutions. You can look for the overlap of mutual interests. You can be a listener, a creative problem solver, and be flexible. And you really should bring to the negotiation table a well-prepared and serious mindset. Be ready. So by showing them something different, you can achieve your immediate business objective on good terms. In other words, get the deal and do it well. You can build a sustainable long-term relationship, and you may open the door through that relationship and through how you treated them to sharing the gospel down the road. In other words, God has called us to walk as children of light. And in the context of negotiation, we have the opportunity to be light to other people by showing them how Jesus loves them and demonstrating that. So let's talk about our third principle. The third principle is that win-win is always richer than win-lose. Okay, well, what do I mean by win-lose? It's the same thing as a zero-sum approach. The theory behind that is there's a fixed size pie, and the goal is to get as much of it for yourself as possible and leave as little for the other side as possible. And there I have encountered a lot of people in negotiations who really take that approach, that they can't be happy unless they're taking everything. Well, the person who approaches negotiation that way thinks that they're winning, but ultimately everybody is losing. And I'll tell you why. Well, here's an example of what can happen. There's lots of give and take in that negotiation. They took and we gave. God tells us to do the opposite. He tells us to pursue the win-win, okay? And here's where it comes from. It's right from Genesis, right from the beginning. God blessed them, and God said to them, be fruitful and multiply. That's Genesis 1:28. It's that multiply factor that is key to understanding this here. So in the win-win theory, a win-win approach seeks to multiply what the two have. so that both sides walk away with a really satisfying slice of what becomes a bigger pie. Not just a big slice of the existing pie, but make it bigger, and everybody gets a good piece. That is a better outcome for you because the solution serves the interests of both sides well. That creates the foundation for a stable, long-term, possibly growing relationship. And it demonstrates the love and the care of Christ. So how do we pursue that? Well, if you're familiar with the book Getting to Yes, this may sound a little bit familiar to you. That's an excellent book, by the way. But I love the concept of positions versus interests, okay? Well, I'm going to illustrate that with our friends Bob and Joan, okay? Bob is a Christian businessman, and Joan makes widgets that Bob would like to sell, or Bob would like to buy from Joan, and Joan is very interested in selling to Bob. But if they're focused on positions, here's how they're going to think about it. Bob says, I'm not going to pay a penny more than $6 a unit. Well, Joan's focus is I won't sell for less than $7.50 a unit, so including shipping. Both of them are including shipping. And that's their bottom line. It's a bottom line approach. And there's a gap. Obviously, $1.50 a unit. And when we're talking millions of units, you're talking about a lot of money. So somebody is going to have to give in. That does not feel good. And so people who are faced with the prospect of having to give in, they get afraid that they're going to have to lose face, so they often try to dig in, and it just creates tense and inefficient, very friction-filled negotiations. And one or both sides, when they do resolve it, will feel like they've given in more than the other side, and what does that do? Not much but create long-term resentments, which undermines the stability of the relationship going forward. Not a good platform for growth. And then sometimes people just get too stressed out and they say, I'm going to split the difference. Well, is that a good solution? It's arbitrary. Neither side may end up with anything that's really good for them. The problem with it is that the focus tends to be really narrow. They're focused on that one bottom line, the dollar figure that they're going to pay per unit in this example. It's just one dimensional. And they're forgetting, they're excluding, they may be even damaging the other interests that they may have that really underlie the transaction. So you can see, there's a $1.50 gap. How are we going to bridge that? Well, someone in positional negotiating, someone has to lose in order to bridge that gap. For a better negotiation process and better outcomes, I think it's very helpful. I have seen this demonstrated so many times. It's so much better to look at underlying interests, okay? So what are those underlying concerns of the other party? Really getting to understand them. And there's a process for that. And I think it really starts with, first, understanding and prioritizing your own interests. You really need to take a good look at what are you bringing to the table. And it's not necessarily just business factors. It may be personal factors, even though you're negotiating on behalf of the company. And I'm going to illustrate that with Bob. Bob's got three concerns. First, he says, I can resell widgets at $9 a unit, but I can't sell for any more than that, or my competitors are going to undercut me. And his second concern is that he needs to meet profitability goals. And in order to do that, he needs to sell at $3 a unit margin. And if he doesn't meet his goals, he's going to lose some or all of his bonus. And he really needs it because he's got kids in college and he desperately needs a new car. And thirdly, he's got a problem in terms of shipping and cash flow. He's concerned about the timeliness of Joan's shipments from Greece because they are consistently late. It's causing problems with his customers, and that's leading to delays in customer payments to his company. He says, I don't want to have to pay more when poor shipping is just hurting me. I could really do better using the shipper my company uses for our shipments from our Italy plant. They only charge us 50 cents a unit, and they're on time. And so if it were up to me, I'd use them. So Bob now has laid out what his concerns are. He's prioritized them. He's got a good understanding of the factors that are driving him maybe to that position. But now he's focusing on the interests. The second step is to understand what Joan's interests are. Understand the other side's interests. So he takes a little leap of faith, and he goes to Joan and says, Joan, I really would like to understand, can you help me help you? Help me understand what is driving you to your $750 a unit price. Maybe this will help us reach a creative solution. So she takes a little leap of faith of her own, and she says, well, Bob, my shipping costs are killing me. If I could just reduce my shipping costs, I could lower my prices and I'd be able to sell more, but with my current sales volume, I can't get preferred shipping prices. So she's in a bit of a catch-22. Her second concern is that her manufacturing costs are $350 a unit. She's having a hard time reducing that. But if she could make $2 profit per unit to meet those profitability goals, she could attract growth capital to expand her production and sales volume. And with lower profit, it's just going to take a lot longer for her to raise that capital. Okay. Here's a third concern. Joan may or may not share this with Bob, but she kind of looks around at Bob and other companies that might distribute her widgets, and she says, you know, they all have good distribution channels, but I'd really rather stick with Bob's company because they always pay me on time. All right. So now Bob has gained an understanding of Joan's concerns. Joan has gained some understanding of Bob's concerns. And now the step is to identify where do those interests overlap. Okay? So there are several overlaps. The first one is that Bob now understands her natural desire to grow her business. He also sees that's going to help him too, because if she could produce a greater volume and efficiency, that might give his company access to greater supply and maybe at lower per unit pricing. Great for him. The second overlap is that Bob sees that his company's shipper could really reduce her shipping costs if his company could arrange the shipping itself. And then third, Joan recognizes Bob's need for more reliable shipping and is thrilled to gain access to lower shipping costs. So now you kind of make a Venn diagram, and you see right in the middle, they both recognize they need more reliable, less expensive shipping. And I put that one in the middle because it turns out that's the key to unlocking this whole puzzle. So Bob and Joan are able to agree, now that they understand each other's interests and the overlap, they're able to agree that Joan is going to sell product to Bob's company at $5 a unit, and Bob's company is going to arrange and pay for shipping at 50 cents a unit. And the result is a win-win. Why? Well, for Bob, now here's look at his bottom line in terms of dollars. He has a $9 top resale price minus his costs of $5 a unit and 50 cents of shipping. His profit is now $350 per unit. That's a bigger profit than he was expecting. His second win is that more reliable shipping means faster customer payments and smoother cash flow for his company. And his third win is kind of personal. He's a hero in his company, and his family really loves the new car. So for Joan, the fourth and maybe the most important is that Bob now knows that he has blessed Joan. And he has real hope that he may have the opportunity, because she now trusts him, to share the gospel. For Joan, she also wins. She sells at $550 a unit, minus her $250 shipping or manufacturing costs, and she has no shipping costs. So now, instead of a $2 profit that she was aiming for, she's actually making $3 a unit profit. So the banks are now lining up to provide expansion capital for her. And Joan appreciates and trusts Bob, and she really looks forward to a long-term relationship, and that may open the door to her hearing and receiving the gospel. There's some biblical examples of win-win and, unfortunately, win-lose. Let's talk about the win-lose, Rehoboam. Rehoboam, if you remember from 1 Kings 12, he was the son of King Solomon. He succeeded King Solomon to the throne, and as he took the throne, the people came to him and said, we will serve you forever if you will just reduce our burdens. They were experiencing forced labor and heavy taxes. Well, Rehoboam got two sets of advice. One was from the elder advisors who said, you should take them up on the offer, reduce their burdens, they'll be loyal to you forever. Unfortunately, he listened to his younger, maybe more hot-headed advisors who told him, you should threaten to increase their burdens if they don't obey. Well, the end result was Rehoboam lost 10 tribes from the kingdom of Judah and entered into perpetual war with the kingdom of Israel. On the more positive side, we can think of Daniel and his friends and the king's servant from Daniel 1, 3 through 15. This is the situation where Daniel and his friends were brought into the king's court and they were being kind of groomed to serve in the court and they were being given food and wine from the king's table. But unfortunately, it was not food that in obedience to God they could really eat. So the king's servant who was over them became concerned because they weren't eating and said, I'm going to lose my head, literally, if you guys are not healthy. So Daniel listens to this and says, how about we do a test? For 10 days, let us eat vegetables and water, and then you compare us and how we're doing with those who are eating food and wine from the king's table. Well, at the end of the 10 days, Daniel and his friends were markedly more healthy and robust than the others who were eating from the king's table. And it proved to be a win-win. Daniel and his friends did not have to eat food that would defile them in the eyes of God. And the king's servant kept his life and his job. Pursuing that win-win outcome by focusing on both parties' interests, ultimately it pleases God. It's really obedient to him. Because Jesus says, let each one of you look not only to his own interests, but also to the interests of others. That's not a quote from Jesus, but it's from Philippians 2:4, Paul's letter to the Philippians. It also leads to business success by multiplying the benefits for everybody. And finally, in doing that, it really is a tangible way for you to demonstrate the love of Christ and maybe open the door to sharing the gospel. You may not have the opportunity to overtly share the gospel, but they're going to see something different, and ultimately they may wonder and be attracted by that and want to find out more. Here's an example from a very secular man who even understood this win-win principle. And he wrote, my father said you must never try to make all the money that's in a deal. Let the other fellow make some money too, because if you have a reputation for making all the money always, you won't have many deals. That's J. Paul Getty, who was a pretty tough cookie. But he understood this. Our last principle today is that kingdom-minded negotiating means smart and confident negotiating. You're called as a believer and as a business owner to be smart in your negotiating because God owns it all. That business that you have belongs to him. Everything that you have belongs to God. He says in Psalm 24:1, he tells us the earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof. And then in Haggai 2:8, God says the silver is mine and the gold is mine. So you're a steward. I know you've heard this, but you really are a steward of what God has given you. So what does that mean? Well, it certainly means taking that business that you have and pursuing growth. I mean, we can think of the parable of talents from Matthew 25, where the servants who had invested what God had entrusted to them were blessed and rewarded, but the servant who just buried it was punished. But it also means counting the cost. And God says, for which of you desiring to build a tower does not first sit down and count the cost, whether he has enough to complete it? That's from Luke 14:28. So stewardship really counts the cost, and in negotiating, that means do your homework. Do your homework. Be prepared. And here's some ways that you can do that. Of course, as we said, you need to identify and understand your interests. You need to obtain wise counsel to think through the potential transaction or whatever it is you're negotiating, whether it's a dispute, how you're going to approach the dispute, or a joint venture, whether this is a suitable partner, or whether it's a good deal. Obtain wise counsel. Learn and anticipate the other side's interests and look for overlapping interests. here's something else that you can do. You can do this with the other side, or you can step back. I think it's good to do this on your own and maybe do it with the other side if it's appropriate, but brainstorm some creative solution options. Gather your information, understand the other side's interests, and then take some time and brainstorm some creative options that will suit both parties. And then look at and identify what's your best option besides the negotiated deal. You may have several options, but look, what's your best one? And figure out whether that best option is better than the deal. This is all part of thinking through things before you come to the table or after you've gathered information and as you pursue that negotiation. I just like this cartoon. They may not have thought through the deal very well. Kingdom-minded negotiation also means confident negotiation. And this is what the point I want to end on. You can really have confidence to step out and take a risk, but also to do what's right, to follow God's call in the way that you negotiate, because God is a trustworthy God. God tells us in Proverbs 3, 5, and 6, trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him, and he will make straight your paths. And he also, Jesus tells us in Matthew 6, 33, seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things will be added to you. You know, when I counsel clients through negotiations, I deal with a lot of nervous clients. They're worried. Is this going to work out? What if the deal falls through? They're worried. But we can trust God. God is going to end up bringing about what's best. It might not be what you anticipated. It might not even be that you reach a deal. But you can step forward in faith. You can go forward in confidence dealing with the other party. And you can risk treating them the way God calls you to treat them, and trusting God that God is going to reward that. He's going to give you what is best. So, I hope this has been helpful to you. We have a few more minutes for questions. I have a mic here if there are any questions. Let me just turn it on. Let's see here. Yeah. There you go.
Thank you, Kevin. Are we really on? Whatever.
Okay.
Doesn't matter. I'm glad you talked about the trustworthiness of God, but I think trust between the two parties is real important. Do you want to address that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because that's better than any contract.
Absolutely. You know, I think I'm glad you brought that up, because this kingdom-minded approach is really something that intentionally, by seeking relationship, by expressing care for the other party, by demonstrating care and empathy, and looking to bless that other party in a way that blesses you both mutually, that's inherently trust building. You know, you may start negotiating with somebody who you don't know well. You may even start negotiating with somebody who may not have the best reputation. And of course, you're going to have to be discerning about ultimately whether that person is trustworthy. You don't need to expect that this is going to change everything about them. But the typical negotiation, you're dealing with a person who's generally a decent person, may or may not know the Lord, but this is inherently going to build trust. I've seen it over and over. And by showing that you are interested in their welfare and building a solution that works for both of you and really can bless, that is a huge ingredient in building trust and a long-term relationship, and it opens a lot of doors, both to increase business and profitability and growth, but also to building a relationship as people where you may be able to share the gospel. And you know, even if you don't end up sharing the gospel, that you have shown yourself to be a trustworthy person and allowed that person, maybe even made yourself a little vulnerable and allowed that person to see you as human, it helps them trust you and hopefully engenders kind of a reciprocal response that builds trust. Does that answer your question, John? Great. Other questions?
Yeah. I have because my husband's working on selling our business.
Oh, wow.
So my mind goes to the other party wanting to take advantage of us.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're not really Christian, so they're not worried about maybe giving us the best deal. So how do you, in Christ's love, not be taken advantage of and ask for more?
Great question. Great question. You know, I think an important ingredient of that is to think about, well, what's your best alternative to their deal? I mean, God is not calling us here to allow ourselves to be taken advantage of. God calls us to be stewards of our business, and that means that we need to be discerning. If it's a bad deal, it's a bad deal, and it isn't something that you should necessarily accept just because it's the only deal. Again, we can trust God. There's something else out there that will be better. But you know, I think the key is discernment. I think it's maybe demonstrating care for that person that might soften them a little bit, maybe change their thinking. But also doing your homework, understanding what is my alternative, what's my best alternative if this deal doesn't work out, and understand whether that's an alternative that you can live with. And if you don't have another alternative, well, that's difficult, but I would still argue that God's timing, God knows what he has for you, and he's still not asking you to be, you know, allow yourself to be abused or taken advantage of. He can provide things when you don't see an alternative. And I've had clients that have encountered that and just counseled, you know, how much worse are you off if you wait? Well, sometimes that is a really difficult position, but, you know, it's really being discerning and asking God for direction, and he will give you the answer.
That's okay.
Oh, well, you know what? I have to give you the mic because they want to record it.
That's right. I think everybody will hear me.
Okay.
I actually don't think it's on.
Hello? Well,
doing it this way also creates an opportunity.
I think it's the soundboard.
To share the gospel with the lawyers.
That's true. That's true.
You stick to doing what's right, and the lawyer says, no, you shouldn't really do that. Why do you want to do this? Because that's not right. Do it for these reasons.
Mm-hmm.
You
know, that's true. I mean, the lawyers on the other side of the deal are people too. And they're, you know, often a mess. So
even your own lawyers. I mean, if you're looking for the best of what they are, they're not necessarily
right.
Believers are more likely accepted.
Right. I mean, I think it's, you know, that's one of the blessings that I have in my practice is that I'm actually able to apply overtly kingdom principles to what I do. But of course, I haven't always been in a firm that allowed me to do that. And, you know, I've certainly run into people who just have no experience thinking that. And I even Christian lawyers have never really applied biblical wisdom to how they practice law. So it's really kind of exciting to be able to show them something different and that it works. I honestly think this approach has led to so much more success in the transactions that I've negotiated than, you know, oftentimes other lawyers who don't understand this would have expected. It's very exciting.
Have you found it to be more difficult when you're dealing with a really large corporation who maybe has a person that's just, their only job is to...
Yes. Sometimes I have. I can think of a particular airline and a particular retailer that I have negotiated with, and they're mega size companies. And, you know, again, it all came back to looking at those people as people and trying to understand what is going on in their lives that is making them difficult. I mean, sometimes you just encounter people who are difficult, and they're just difficult because that's the way they're wired. That's the way they think. But other times, that really difficult person is thinking, oh my gosh, if I don't achieve this objective for my employer, I'm not going to get that promotion. I'm not going to get that bonus. I'm going to get passed over. And they may be operating in an environment in their workplace that is not really very healthy. So, You know, again, this is that is probably one of the touch points when looking to the other side's interests can be so helpful. I mean, think of Joan. She started out, you know, I have to sell for $750 a unit. Well, she didn't end up in that place, but she ended up with better profit margins. So it really was, it was a different kind of win for her, but it was better. And it was one that she could not only live with, but really be happy about. So I think it is important to try to see them as human beings and connect with them on that level and understand what's going on behind the scenes. And that can really break the barriers down. Other questions? Deborah.
I handle a lot of high emotion cases.
Mm-hmm.
Will contests, personal injury. I've got one now where I don't think it happened. Not sure how to negotiate with people who are living in an alternate reality. Or in the will contest, it's never about the money or the house. It's all about dad would never have done this.
Mm-hmm.
I was his favorite kid, you know. And my client, again, has an alternate reality of, no, dad didn't trust you, we're spending all your money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is why we're here, is because, once again, you have a pattern of not doing what you're supposed to do, or whatever the family dynamic.
Right, right.
How can you get past that, again, when sometimes you just have conflicting views of reality that are very hard to find any overlapping interest?
Well, that is really challenging. I'm not going to deny it. And I'm not saying that kingdom-minded negotiation is going to lead to a great outcome in every circumstance, because you are dealing with the people who are involved and they kind of bring whatever it is they bring. But even when they're in alternate realities, if you can kind of refocus on outcomes and look to something that's outside of their personal perspective to help lead them to something that is in their mutual interest, that may be helpful. So, you know, for example, I can't necessarily solve their feelings about who was the favorite kid, but maybe we can look to an objective third-party valuation expert who can help reach a value that both parties can live with, even if they're coming at it from completely different realities. So, you know, I can't solve all of that, but the more that you can pull them away from being focused on their position and their reality and move them towards objective principles that can overlap, the better. That's a good question. I think in the end, it's not necessarily going to take more than any other negotiation, because what you're doing is you're kind of shifting some of the time investment. You're shifting it to the front end where you're kind of doing your homework, you're investing in the relationship, you're exploring and understanding the other side. But with that, you can actually have a more efficient, less frictional negotiation. So if you can do that homework and really show that you're trying to work together for the benefit of both and invite the other side into that process, that may, it's like lubrication for the whole negotiation. And ultimately, I think it ends up taking about the same amount of time and frankly can be more efficient. Last question.
Okay.
I'm sorry, we're running out of time, but I appreciate it.
I found myself in a situation being a younger professional that get taken as seriously sometimes, and when you finally do get a meeting, whether it's a negotiation or even just FaceTime with somebody, that they, okay, what do you want? Hurry up, what's your get to the point? When you're trying to do those things where you're trying to get some of their interest and break down that personal emotional barrier, do you have any suggestions or ways to maybe mitigate that a little bit where they might be open a little bit more with you and want to take you more seriously, or how to kind of get around that where they You're only 20-something. You don't know anything. You don't talk. Which
right.
I don't always do, but.
Well, you know, I think, I think my best advice to you is, you know, do your homework, be well prepared, think through your options, think through your proposals so that you can kind of impress them with your preparedness, your knowledgeability, and so that you can be more concise. If they don't want to listen to a lot of, you know, you because you're only 20, if you can be well prepared and be more concise, that may open the door to continued conversation. It's unfortunately there's just an element of, you know, you're going to kind of learn the hard way, but that experience is going to be invaluable to you. So, you know, and hang in there, and again, trust God. God will still open doors for you. He's the key to your success. Every client that I have is somebody who God sent, not because I'm a great marketer. Okay, every deal that you get is because God was in it, and He'll be faithful.
Thought that I have is that if you are dealing with another Christian, sincere Christian, then you both really what you want is the Lord's will.
Yes.
But it's hard to get at the real agenda sometimes. So maybe beginning and ending each session in sincere prayer.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
So if you're willing to give on your part, certainly feel like you're advancing the kingdom better and just really seek the Lord's will. Maybe it'll break down some of the barriers of stubbornness.
Jim, I think that's a great point. I mean, there's nothing like coming together as fellow believers, even if you're differing in your understandings, and giving this whole thing to the Lord and asking the Lord to bridge the gap. That's enormous. Well, I'm very happy to answer any other questions offline. I know they need us to wrap up the formal session. Thank you so much for coming. Delighted to talk with any of you afterwards or during the rest of the conference. Thanks again.